In a report from the President's Council on Sustainable Development, we need a new collaborative decision process that leads to better decisions, more rapid change, and more sensible use of human, natural, and financial resources in achieving our goals. And at the same time, Harvey Reuven, Vice Chair of the Wildlands Project, says individual rights will have to take a back seat to the collective. J. Gary Lawrence, advisor to President Clinton's Council on Sustainable Development. Participating in a UN-advocated planning process would very likely bring out many of the conspiracy-fixated groups and individuals in our society. And here we are. This segment of our society...
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me on Fair Dinkum Radio. My name is Leon Pittard. We are broadcasting worldwide from the land down under. And on the other line, we have Vinnie Eastwood from the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Vinnie, welcome along.
I'm on the other land down under.
Welcome along, old mate. Thank you for joining us tonight. We are going to talk about the lighter side of genocide and employer phobia and all of these great times. And you've even got he's even got the T-shirt on the lighter side of genocide. Well, welcome along, Vinny. I suppose you know. Your motto, the lighter side of genocide, has been developed. Well, you tell me, you tell us, how did you develop that motto in your media work?
I don't know. I just guess that there's an awful lot of really, really depressing things that we wind up discussing and talking about and looking at in this movement. And the only people that manage to retain some form of sense of sanity are those who can laugh about it, make jokes, and it's just thinking about it. Hey. It's the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts.
Now tell me, do you think that this trait is something that's inherited or developed?
Dunno. I've always been one for like to indulge in a cackle. Or three.
Well, I've noticed that in my life, in my younger years, I was always a lot more humorous, but as reality began to dawn on me, I've become a lot more serious. But anyway, here we are. But listen, you tell us, I want you to tell our listeners your story. How did you get to employophobia and ended up with a 5-day-a-week resistance radio show broadcasting out of New Zealand, broadcasting worldwide?
Mm-mm. It's a long story. I don't know. It depends how far back you want to go.
You've got 5 minutes.
Let's see if we can go back real, real far. I was never the popular kid when I was in Form 1 at age 11. I was in a classroom of 32 boys, 30 of which, not including myself and one other boy, gave me abuse all day, every day, for being fat or something or other. And so I kind of I didn't really like that happening to me a lot. So I kind of realized that I was all on my own. And what I found was when I went to university down in Dunedin is that, well essentially, people were liars. People were cheats. My flatmates and neighbors and everybody just keep getting screwed over, and I found that the reason why this was happening is because I was trusting people. You know, I chose to see the good in people, and unfortunately I was being naive. The good in people doesn't really exist unless you have a vetted person who's sitting in front of you, somebody who has proved themselves. And when I was busted for cannabis, I think I had 13 grams of it. You know, cops came through the door and I said, okay, well, jig is up. All right, guys, here's my tinnies. Here's my personal stash. Here's my baggies. Here's my this, that, and the other. And yes. And they say, well, you know, if you be honest with us, we'll go easy on you. So I go, oh, okay, well, I've been dealing marijuana for about 8 months and been selling about an ounce a week or whatever. And despite the fact that I gave them all the evidence they needed to convict me in a confession, they still made it up in court. claimed that I had sold something like $40,000 worth of weed over 6 months. And it's like, are you crazy? That's insane. And I developed, I had my first panic attack in the cells, actually. And, you know, legs gave out on me. I couldn't breathe, couldn't think. And it was all because they cut my greenstone off my neck, which had really been my only real connection to home, is a real spiritual thing. And when I came out of Dunedin, you know, my mum flew down, saved my ass. I went into work doing telesales and got back into university at the same time. And I've discovered that I was really good at talking to people over the phone and selling them products of, you know, telecommunication description. I became number one in the company. 6 months solid. Nobody could to match my sales record. And kind of got bored of it because when I get really good at things, then I get bored. So as soon as I become the number one talk radio show host in the world, I'll just, you know, I'll get bored and I'll go on to something else. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. So there's people far more talented than I. And I wrote a 7-page essay about the company shortfalls. And so instead of addressing any of the points that I raised in this 7-page essay, the company elected instead to offer me $6,000 to leave in the next 5 minutes and never tell people the company for which I worked. So I thought, oh, you know what? I haven't had a summer holiday in a long time. $6,000, I think, would probably go a long way. So I took that, had it in a summer holiday, and then when the money ran out, I was asked to, told by my missus to go get another job. And so I did. And this job was paying me so little that I was doing all the work of a normal 40-hour week, but I was winding up about $60 in debt at the end of every week. I had to pay all my own travel expenses. I had to pay all my own cell phone bills and everything like that. And I was a traveling salesman, you know, going out door to door in the suburbs all over the city. I was like, well, this is messed up. And then I went to the owner and said, look, man, you really need to pay me more. Otherwise, I can't keep doing this. And he goes, oh, you think you've got me over a barrel, do you? I was like, and I was out. And so nicely enough, one of the other employees of that company who did have him over a barrel stole me and another of the other good salesmen from that company and started a new one. And they paid me a hell of a lot more. My last paycheck was $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers. You know Westfield, the legal shopping centers. We've got them here too.
Yeah.
And I think maybe $4,000 cash in a month. And I was like, whoa, that's the biggest paycheck I've ever had. And that was the last paycheck I ever got because I quit. You know, it just didn't feel right doing what I was doing. My boss was a psychopath. He was just calling me up at like 9:30 at night on a Friday while I'm sitting at my mate's place having a beer and tells me to get up, get off the couch, find a pen, find a piece of paper, write down the number of a client to call on Monday. It's like, why didn't you send me a text message? Why didn't you tell me about this even better on Monday?
So this was the beginning of employer phobia, right?
Mm-hmm. So when I quit, I lived off that money that I had, bought myself a computer and bought myself a camera with a little tripod, and I started going out filming protests and things like that because I've been listening to Alex Jones and watching uber amounts of documentaries. Like I think in my last few months, maybe 2-3 months of working, I'd consumed a total of maybe about 160 documentaries plus. So I had a geometrically massive shift in my worldview due to the induction of copious quantities, more information than I'd ever been exposed to in my entire life. And I think that was probably what depressed me. That was probably what made me not want to work anymore. This is where the employer phobia came from, because I saw employment as a distraction from getting things done that were right and good in this world. And so I stopped working and stopped working for people and started working with people. Started going out to protests, started going out to public meetings, filming them, putting them up on YouTube. And then after about 2 years of that, I was approached by a man named Mr. Mitch Santel, who became my producer of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, saying that they had a show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com called The American Freedom Report, hosted by Dave Von Kleist and Brent Johnson, the voice of freedom, Dave Von Kleist made of the 9/11 film, 9/11 in Plain Sight. And Dave Von Kleist was exiting the program, citing that there were connectivity issues because he was in Argentina. And so Brent Johnson was looking for a co-host. And I was thrown into the mix as one of these potential co-hosts. And the rating shot up from the bottom of the network into, you know, much higher at least.
So how long has your show been running now, Vinny, on American Freedom Radio?
Nearly 3 years.
Excellent. Now, I notice that you video virtually all of your interviews, and you have an incredible number of guests that you have all the time. But let's talk for a moment about the issues in New Zealand that you do confront there. I mean, I suppose generally we're confronting many of the same issues everywhere, but give us a little bit of a feel of the political landscape there, some of the current issues that are really happening in your home country.
Well, you know, all countries I've determined have the exact same stuff going on, especially if they're Western nations that have an English-speaking population. So you've got corrupt politicians that say whatever the hell they want in order to get elected, and then when they get elected, they never do a single thing that they fracking said, right?
Exactly, yeah.
We've got same politicians that say whatever they want in order to get elected, and once they get elected, they don't do a single fracking one of them. Two, you've got fluoridation, even though it's completely insane, and it comes from the phosphate fertilizer industry or the aluminium smelters or anything like that, and it's put in the water supply for absolutely no good reason with no scientific evidence to verify that it's actually good for your teeth. We've got people doing that too. Have you got chemtrails? We got chemtrails. Have you got some kind of a massive pesticide problem where people are spraying pesticides all over the frickin' hell place and cancer rates are shooting up like there's no frickin' tomorrow, massive asthma rate increases? We've got that too. Have you got, military or police or something like that acting like a bunch of scumbags or maybe participating in foreign wars that you have no freaking business being in there? Hey, we've got that too. We've got our boys in Afghanistan. We've got the police being passed legislation like the Search and Surveillance Bill, which is essentially the New Zealand version of the Patriot Act that allows them to surveil you for up to 3 days without a warrant and even bust into your house and install cameras in your bathroom or whatever and watch you doing whatever they want. They can even charge you with receiving things in the future. So if they charge you with receiving a document of some kind and then that document turns up like 10 years later or whatever, you go to jail.
Tell us
no
about
no pass and go or collecting $200.
You've got basically all the same issues that we've got here. But tell us about your national identity and the assaults from offshore corporations to take over your farming land. Is the same thing happening as what is happening in Australia, where we are under assault here on several different fronts? Number one, it's offshore foreign-owned corporations, which are often government-owned corporations, which are wanting to purchase our prime farming land for their own food security, or it's offshore mining companies wanting to come and rape and pillage our farmers' property while they stay there while it becomes an industrial landscape. I mean, do you have similar issues?
The New Zealand government wants to rig up council land or what's called as DOC, Department of Conservation Land, and open that up for mining. So yes, on that front. The largest private farm conglomerate known as the Crayfar Farms is being purchased by a massive Chinese conglomerate. So yes, on that front. And you can look up Liz Lambert on my YouTube channel. She's the person representing them trying to sort that one out. And
is that a dairy farming operation?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, same diff. That's why they call it a new world order.
And China's really targeting dairy farms over here too. In Tasmania, Western Australia, Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria, virtually every state, they're after the dairy because they're after it for their own people first.
Yeah, and even James Cameron, the director of Avatar, came in and bought himself a massive tract of farmland in New Zealand too. And one of my American listeners asked me, Vinny, you know, how expensive is farmland in New Zealand? And I said, well, let me put it like this. The only people who can afford to buy New Zealand farmland now are massive Chinese conglomerates and James fracking Cameron.
Yeah, that's it. And the government is giving their corporate mafia corporate mates the green lights to come in And eventually what you find and what we've found here is a the registry list of members of parliament that have exited parliament, but which are now working for those same corporations, because they've been guaranteed superannuation, as in an advocacy position within the corporation, which because they've got open doors into government in Australia. And most of the mining corporations now, the advocates, the prime advocates in there are previous members of parliament that promised their people that they would never sell out their own country. And they're there walking through the doors of parliament advocating to sell land to these corporations.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because Sir Michael Fay, who's a previous parliamentarian in New Zealand, was also one of the potential buyers for the Crayfar Farms deal here. And you know what he's famous for? He's famous for buying up large New Zealand tracts of land and corporations and chopping them off and selling them off to the Chinese. So, our choice?
Well, our previous one of our previous prime ministers here, Bob Hawke, was recently touring China in doing that exact work, in advocating to Chinese companies to come and buy Australian land. And the Newspeak term is economic investment. They say, we need people, we need these foreign companies to come into your country and buy your land, so that this is economic investment. And in the end, what we end up with is a few slave bottom ladder jobs for the common man in Australia, where the corporation takes all the profits and ends up holding the mortgage of the country.
Pretty much, you become a tenant in your own country, and that's really all it comes down to. Is that's part of Agenda 21, isn't it? You know,
absolutely.
Abolish private ownership to a degree, and I think what they're doing is they're doing a step by step program. They're taking it from private ownership into corporate ownership, and then into government ownership. I think that's what all these bailouts and everything is about. Is just implementing socialism worldwide and just taking over all the assets and stripping them, putting them under government control, that kind of thing. Until eventually, we'll all just be really just slaves on the global surf, and we'll only be able to live places if we have permission, no matter how much money we got.
Yeah, well, I see it also like a and you're right. There's several different methods being used. Like on one hand, you've got farmers retreating from their land because they're forced to because of industry. Industry's actually moving in, forcing them out. Now, the governments are saying, well, that's all right. Now, when that land is left as a wasteland, I can see when the corporation says, we're finished, that governments will step in and say, well, we will have to lock this up for rehabilitation. And hence, the wild land type concept comes in because the farmer's gone. So the farmer leaves under several different reasons. Number one, he can't live with mining because obviously that's not his life. Number two, he's economically forced out by increased input costs, which can be manipulated. So increased input costs, manipulated market costs, basically have different ways that the farmer ends up moving off. In the meantime, where are we getting our food from? Asia. From other corporate-owned slave camps that we have ceded our food security to.
Well, David Rockefeller said that the experimentation of the Chinese model, a.k.a. full-on communist tyranny, is one of the most important experiments in human history. And he's right. It is very important. It's important to not go down that way where you don't have any freedom, where you go to a forced labor camp if you speak out against government tyranny of any kind. That is what is coming. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether you stand on the street corners. It doesn't matter if you blare it out on the radio. It keeps coming. I don't know what will stop this massive juggernaut. Frankly, I don't care. The only thing that I really care about is doing what's right. And I know that sitting around doing nothing while this is going on is not right.
Absolutely. And we've got to speak up. And I want to share this news item with you and get you to comment on it. The communications minister over here, Stephen Conroy, has been caught out after placing ghost-written articles lauding the National Broadband Network in newspapers and magazines around the country. And what it's what the Australian has revealed is that there has been, and no one knows how many, I would say hundreds or thousands of articles which have actually been sent out to blog sites, to newspapers, as press releases, ghostwritten. In other words, written by no one knows who. In other words, Joe Blow, right? And what they are doing is lauding the actual government NBN program. Now, the National Broadband Network program is already massively over budget, underutilised, and their aim was to basically run this corporate communications network all around Australia, taking away people's choice, where everyone will be forced onto the broadband network. Hence, all they have to do is employ their own filtering system, which is what they've said they want to do, and the people will be forced to pay whatever fees are set out for them, and the power of choice is basically taken away. And so here the communications department themselves are employing their own bureaucrats to write letters to blog sites and to society. In fact, only yesterday, all of the different ministers have been caught out putting out propaganda leaflets to their actual constituency, saying that the government has returned the budget to surplus when they're billions of dollars in debt. I mean, it's just a complete lying system, putting out saying this is what we're doing, and it's the actual opposite.
But it's liars putting out lies so that people won't realize that they lie. You know, it's classic, and it doesn't make it doesn't surprise me in the least, Leon. Really.
Well, the next step is to legislate against us calling it lies, right?
Yeah. We were talking about that on my show, weren't we? About the
new anti-discrimination draft bill. And so that if we offend someone in this conversation, we can be taken to court because we've offended them, whether it be a political issue, a sexual issue, a cultural issue, whatever it is, we can be taken to court and charged for causing offence. So this is the next step in the communist system, is developing policy and legislation around stopping you speaking against government tyranny.
Well, you know, the power of the word is mighty indeed. And I think they're really scrambling right now because they've realised how powerful we are, that when we speak, it is not just the person across the table that is listening to us. It is many, many people all across the world who are hearing these things that we're saying. And these ideas can foment and grow and be strong, and they can activate individuals. And, you know, frankly, I don't think that the masses are people that need to be woken up. The masses traditionally throughout history have never woken up to anything. They simply follow whichever shepherd has put in front of them, regardless of whether or not that shepherd leads them to greener pastures or to the slaughterhouse. And so I am of the opinion that all you need to do is wake up just singular individuals, and not just wake them up, but activate them, actually make them have the choice, make that decision. You know what? I'm not going to go to my slave job today. I'm actually going to start exposing some scumbaggery. I'm going to write a letter to my parliament, and I'm just going to tell them, look, I'm not going to put up with your BS. I'm not going to get off my land if you tell me to. I'm not going to buy these ruthless, stupid products that these massive major corporations are contaminating with melamine and goodness knows whatever subside of materials and what have you. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to comply. If you get somebody to make that stand, if you get somebody who will literally sacrifice part of their life, even their life itself, for the truth and for freedom, it doesn't matter how much tyranny there really is, because nothing can actually break a person like that. Kind of like, there's an old saying in Afghanistan, I think, or somewhere around there, so God deliver us from the teeth of the tiger, the venom of the cobra, and the vengeance of the Afghan.
Yep. Yep.
Just don't take any BS off of these people, essentially. You can't be beaten. It doesn't matter how many times. Afghanistan tried to be invaded by Alexander the Great, by the Russians, by the Americans. Yeah. They haven't been defeated yet.
No, and they're still going strong. Now, Vinny, mm-hmm. you interview a lot of people from a lot of different fields of thought and thinking. And you interview a lot of people in the resistance, a lot of different ideas. When you put all that together, what do you see? What do you see in the development of this global management program is on the horizon? What do you think is what we need to be really watching? That are some of the next steps towards implementing further tyranny? You know, out of all of the different ideas, and everyone comes to it in from different backgrounds, and you know, from different learning, people have read different books about the social engineers that have designed this system, and you know, I've read a lot of history about from the people that have laid out their plans. But as I see these steps taking place, but I want to get your perspective. Tell us what you think, how you see things developing further.
Short answer, I don't know. The world is a very large, very complex place. And I've learned a lot of things.
Mm.
And, you know, what I've learned most is that I don't know nothing. Mm. All right, that's the only thing, that's the only immutable fact that I've learned, is that I don't know what I'm talking about 99% of the time. I'm not a specialized person. I don't look at one particular issue and familiarize myself with the ins and outs of it. I'm a generalist. So I'll interview 100 different people about 100 different subjects, know a little bit about those subjects from those specialists, and I'll come up with my own conclusions about the world. However, if you ask me to recite details, facts, figures, things of that nature, I'll just be like drawing a blank. I have no idea. Can't remember.
It's the lighter side of genocide, Vinny.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember specifics, but yeah. I can remember, you know, feelings or general ideas or conclusions that I've come up with. So in terms of conclusions, how could I put this? The world is infinitely complex, and the only thing that you would ever be capable of changing, and the only thing that you'd ever be capable of fully understanding, is your own corner, okay? And the only thing you're really capable of being of saving is the man next to you.
Now, let me ask you another question, which is, I guess, coming at the same question from a different angle. Have you had any pressure from government bodies or people in New Zealand regarding your resistance?
None whatsoever. In fact, I could show you two articles out of the mainstream media that are very positive of me.
Fantastic.
You know, none whatsoever. Maybe if I kept doing what I was doing a couple of years back before I got a radio show, where I was going out and getting in the face of all these politicians and asking them tough questions, that kind of thing. Now all I'm doing is bringing on people who already know that there's a problem, with an audience who already understand what the problem is, and I'm just preaching to the converted. I'm not really offending anybody, because the people who don't want to listen to me never hear what I've got to say.
Now tell me, out of all those rallies that you attended with your bullhorn, and got involved in, have you got a carbon tax in New Zealand? You have, haven't you?
Oh yeah, five cents a litre, and up to 5% on all power costs already.
Yeah, how many dollars a tonne is your carbon tax rate at, do you know?
Can't tell you.
Okay, it says $23 a tonne over here, where the world, the European carbon market basically dropped to €3 last week, which means that, I mean, we're paying way over the odds here, but you've seen the effect of your carbon price. How long has it been in over there?
I think since last election, nearly four years.
Yep. Mm. Industries closing, like manufacturing type industries being affected adversely.
Oh, our manufacturing industry was gone before it even started, mostly. Yeah. You know, like the last tool makers in New Zealand shut down not too long ago. House prices in Auckland are so expensive now that about 50% of the people who live in the city will never be able to afford their own home. We've got so many really, really nasty things going on. Unemployment's shooting up. I mean, there was an incident where a new supermarket was opening up, a Countdown, in South Auckland. And something like 3,000 people turned up waiting in line to apply for about 50 jobs that were available. You know, like, it's getting frickin' desperate out there.
What's the employment rate, do you know?
Can't tell you off the top of my head. Somewhere around 6% unemployment, maybe between 4. I don't know.
But the same thing. Well, the thing is, with the carbon tax, the way it's affecting remaining industries, even your dairy industry, it would be affecting that because of your input costs of electricity, because all dairies use power to actually run their dairies.
Well, hold on. Here's the problem. You know why it's really difficult to actually say statistics and stuff like that, and actually, because all the stuff that gets reported on the mainstream media are lies.
Yeah, it's all changing.
The mainstream media is reporting that the New Zealand economy is on the turnaround, that it's frickin' armo green acres out there. You know, it's all sweet as. There ain't no frickin' problems. Confidence is high, and yada yada yada. And I'm sitting back and they're in the twilight zone, mate. Yeah, I mean, I've conversations with people all over the place, whether they be in farming or retail or in restaurants and stuff like that. I'm just looking around, you know, where the hell are the customers? And these people are always complaining about the massive amounts of debt that they're under. They're covering up the fact that there's no money being made by getting into debt.
Yeah, that's right. And we have, I think, in our societies, we have this developing a growing bureaucracy, a bloated government bureaucracy that is becoming a large part of the actual employment, whereas the manufacturing jobs have gone to Asia and offshore. Most of our industry's gone, and what we're finding is that the bottom level, the lower level of society, are basically in service positions if they're not in government bureaucrat positions. It's a developing service type industry to service aged care, medical, all of that sort of stuff. So there's definitely a shift going on.
Manufacturing is the source of real wealth, because that's when you take something that's nothing and turn it into something.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Something that's marketable, something that's sellable, something that actually produces a profit of some kind. Service industry, on the other hand, That's just robbing from Peter to pay Paul, as they say. You know, there's no real wealth creation there. Sure, you can pay somebody. I mean, I talked to a cafe owner, and he said that he was he was an employee in the cafe. He was getting paid $16 an hour, and the owner of the cafe was a friend of his, working 60-hour weeks and winding up with about $150 in the hand.
Yep.
You know,
that's it.
It's real nasty out there, and this is due to the lack of wealth creation. And I would say doubly, it's made more so by the extraordinary, inordinate quantity of debt that is being put down on everybody. I mean, I've got debt. I mean, I could scarcely walk down into any street in this country, or into any house party, or in any place in this whole country, and say, put your hands up if you're not in debt. I can guarantee it's a huge, huge minority.
Vinny, we're out of time, mate. Tell people where they can go. VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Tell us about your... give people a bit of direction about the different sites and different things you've got going on.
Okay, it's VinnyEastwoodShow.com, because there's only one. It's me. It's Vinny. I've got guerrillamedia.co.nz, GURILLA media.co.nz, and also you can listen to my radio show 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You can also subscribe to my, for New Zealand anyway, record-breaking YouTube channel, Mr. News. Mr. News Guerrilla Media. That's youtube.com/Mr. News Guerrilla Media, where I put up all the webcam versions of the shows that I do and am on, including this one with your lovely with your lovely self.
Vinny Eastwood, mate, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time. Great work. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers, mate.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Vinny Eastwood from the Vinny Eastwood Show, member of the Resistance in New Zealand, and is there doing a great work on behalf of you, and in fact, on behalf of all of you, mate.